Okay, so we last left off in the middle of Perek Hey with Shlomo really kicking into high gear, getting re ready to build the Beis HaMikdash. We've seen so far this Perek, everything was extremely positive with Shlomo. Earlier in his reign, we had some aspects we were nervous about, but really ever since he had the dream about the wisdom, Shlomo's just been on a winning streak. He's continuing David HaMelech's government. There's stability. Many of the same people are there. If it's not them, it's their children who are being installed. At the same time, revenues are coming in. He has a big army to keep the peace. That's expensive, but similar to the current debate that America is having now, should we have a bigger defense budget where you try to prophylactically prevent things from happening, or do you shrink the budget and hope for the best? So Shlomo has a large army, but he's using that to keep the peace. The Navi said that the borders of the country were maximal. And it went all the way from the Euphrates River in the north to Gaza down in the south. All the surrounding nations, Ammon, Moab, Edom, Aram, the Plishtim, all of them are paying tribute to Shlomo. He's putting that money to good use. And so everything is fantastic. It was given that background that we can understand the last part we did, and now I'll load up the screen share just to refresh our memory of this really astonishing pasuk when Shlomo reaches out to King Hiram, the king of Tzor. Remember Tzor, that's the island off of the Lebanese coast, right? There's the city, the old city of Tzor on the coast, and there's the island city off of the coast. Very excellent defensive position. Not so large though. It's not going to be like a international superpower. And Shlomo reaches out to Hiram, who had an alliance with David, and he says, "Look, I want your cedar wood, the famous cedars of Lebanon, because I want to build a house for HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and I will pay you, and I'll pay good money, particularly I will pay you in food." And the Navi said an astonishing line. Remember when Hiram hears the news, so he told himself, "Vayhi kishmoa Hiram Esther veShlomo veYismach ma'od." He was extraordinarily happy. "Vayomer Baruch Hashem Hayom." Blessed is HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Yod Kei Vav Kei. Right? He's not sending a message to Shlomo over here. This Gentile, presumably pagan, is blessing HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Why? Because he sees the wisdom of Shlomo. So we see there's a massive Kiddush Hashem happening over here, which is something that Shlomo is consistently after his whole entire career. He wants the greatness of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He wants the greatness of Yadus not to be only visible to Klal Yisrael internally, but now as Bnei Yisrael have matured and we're now a real player on the international scene, Shlomo is more ambitious for that. He wants everybody to see the godliness of Hashem and see the greatness of Am Yisrael. That's going to be a major motivating factor in the building of the Beis HaMikdash. That already we've seen different kings coming in to be exposed to Shlomo's wisdom, and that's happening over here as well, right? So you just read this pasuk. This is as a very happy, very, very happy pasuk. We did ask at the end of last week, why is Hiram so extraordinarily blown away? What's the wisdom of Shlomo over here that he says, thank Hashem for giving David a ben chacham, a wise son. What's so wise about Shlomo? He wants cedar wood for a Beis HaMikdash. It's pretty normal to build a house for your God. That's not so extraordinary. Asking for cedar wood is not so extraordinary. The only place in the Middle East that has cedar wood is Lebanon. Who else are you going to go to unless you're going to go to Hiram? So why is Hiram so blown away? And the suggestion that we made last week was that Hiram is very nervous. All of the surrounding kings had attacked David during David's lifetime. That did not go well for them. And David, Yoav, Abishai, they counterattack. And now all the surrounding nations are stuck paying serious tribute, first to David, now to Shlomo. We suggested it would be very natural for Hiram to be concerned. He's the only independent king left standing in the whole area. So it would be very natural for Shlomo, the new king, to say, okay, now I take over, new policy, new administration. Why is there only one king there who isn't paying tribute to me? My army is much bigger than his, and I want to build a Beis HaMikdash, which is going to be very expensive. Guess what? I'm going to march my army up there to Lebanon, and I'm going to take the wood. He's going to give it to me for free, whether he likes it or not. By force, militarily, I'm going to take it from him. The fact that Shlomo reaches out and wants to continue the bris, wants to continue the alliance, the warm alliance that his father David had struck with Hiram, that is what blows Hiram away. That is why he is so happy and he's so amazed by the wisdom of Shlomo, that Shlomo recognizes that in some degree it can be more beneficial to get things through peaceful means, even though he's going to pay for it, and he's going to pay pretty dearly, than it would be to come in by force. We also suggested that one reason why Shlomo would do this is Shlomo's whole his defining aspect of his career is that things should be done through peaceful means. The Torah says that the Beis HaMikdash is not going to be built until Hashem gives us respite from all of our enemies. David HaMelech was not able to build the Beis HaMikdash because he was a warrior. Combat and the Beis HaMikdash do not go hand in hand. So Shlomo is not going to now go and, having almost everything set up for him, ruin it by obtaining the wood he needs through military force and extracting it, with his army. Rather, he's going to go in peaceful means, and that's going to set the tone for this relationship. And as you also see, it's going to set the tone for, I think, something that Shlomo is going to do very interestingly in the building of the Beis HaMikdash. We'll see the Abarbanel raise the points about that, Emirat Hashem, at the end of this year. We should have in mind the whole time the association between Shlomo, peace, and the Beis HaMikdash. That is starting. Literally, the way the Navi introduces the building of the Beis HaMikdash, it does not introduce the Beis HaMikdash with Shlomo saying, "Okay, I'm going to build the Beis HaMikdash." And we'll see later on the beginning of Perek Vav, the Navi is going to have a very dramatic pasuk, which would have been a perfect introductory pasuk for the building of the Beis HaMikdash. That's not how the Navi starts it. The Navi starts the building of the Beis HaMikdash with the peaceful overture from Shlomo to Hiram, which tells us, number one, to think of the Beis HaMikdash as a house built on Shalom. Number two, right, that this house is being built specifically through Shlomo's outreach to the surrounding nations. That ideally this is supposed to be a place, Asher Yikarei L'chol Ha'amim, that all nations can look to. Ideally, as Shlomo really aspires, and we'll see this running through his career, it's not only supposed to be something for Klal Yisrael. We want this to be an international house for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Okay. Now, Hiram had said to Shlomo, "No problem. I'll provide you exactly with what you need. I can give you the wood. I can give you the arazim, that's cedar. I can give you the broshim, those are cypress. How is that going to happen? How are you going to transport, massive tree trunks all the way down to the south?" So Hiram says, "My servants, Yoridu min halvanon yama." So they'll take things down from Lebanon to the sea. Right? Lebanon is the mountain of the elevated mountains, so we'll bring them down to the coast. That's not so hard to do, probably, because gravity is on your side. Once they're on the coast, Vani asinim dovros bayam. What are dovros? So Rashi explains, rafsados. These are rafts. We're gonna make rafts. So what are we gonna make the rafts of? We're gonna make rafts, explains Rashi, with the logs themselves. We'll take the lumber, we'll lash it together to make rafts. We'll then sail the raft down to the place in Eretz Yisrael where Shlomo wants them. Divrei Hayyamim tells us, I think, the port that Shlomo identifies as Yafo. So they sail, just the rafts are sailed down from Lebanon to Yafo. What happens once they get there? When Patzdim Sham, you'll break apart the rafts. So now they'll be able to separate them back into the individual tree trunks. And then they'll transport the trees from the coast, from Yafo to Yerushalayim. Okay, great. In exchange, Va'ata tases chafzi lases lechem besi. In return, you will do what I want. You will provide bread for my house. Okay. Now, the Abarbanel has an interesting suggestion about this word lechem. The pshat probably is that Hiram is asking for food. Lechem doesn't just have to mean bread. Lechem can mean sustenance, right? So you're going to provide the overall menu for for Lebanon. Abarbanel suggests actually that we should read it literally, that he is only asking Shlomo for bread. Then what happens? Navi says that Shlomo gave not only bread, but he gave him a ton of wheat, and he also gave him lots of oil. So the Abarbanel is going to suggest that Shlomo is going to be very generous, and he's going to give Hiram even more than Hiram asked for. Real generosity from Shlomo, not only in terms of the materials, should suggests the Abarbanel, but also how long does this arrangement go for? Pasuk Chafei tells us, what does Shlomo do? So after Hiram gives Shlomo all the wood he wants, Shlomo in return gives all of this food. Ko yitain Shlomo l'Hiram shana b'shana. So Shlomo gave Hiram this amount of food every single year. The question is, how many years is this arrangement lasting for? The Abarbanel quotes the Radak, who says that it just means every year, as long as Hiram was sending the wood. Now, as long as you send me the wood, every year I get wood, you'll send me food. Abarbanel suggests actually that Shlomo just said, you know, permanently, I with my generosity, I am going to provide you with food every single year. Basically, Yoser Nachal Nomar Shayanosin Tamid Mide Shana Beshana Hamachalazah Kol Yimei Chira. Shlomo said, it's a lifetime contract. You give me the wood I want, and I will give you food forever. Abarbanel reads this as showing Shlomo's generosity and also Shlomo's lordliness. Right? Shlomo can afford this. He turns Hiram into somebody who, like, you know, looks to Shlomo, and it, you know, it's like what do we say to Hashem on Yom Kippur, right? Yeah, Im Kabanim, Im Ka'avadim. Whether like sons or like servants, right? We turn to Hashem to help us out. He says that was the relationship between Hiram and Shlomo. Shlomo has so much, he can afford to just give freely to Hiram every single year. And also maybe possible, like a bit of a middle approach to say that Shlomo is not only giving during the years he gets wood, or not that Shlomo is just freely giving endless food, you know, until nonstop, but that Shlomo maybe it's possible Shlomo has Hiram like on retainer. You know, I'm going to provide you food every year, and whatever wood I want, you're going to give me. And Shlomo's going to have many building projects, possible third shot. Either way, we clearly have the sense of warmth between Shlomo and Hiram. Neither one is holding back. They're each providing the other one with exactly what they need and in very generous quantities. And the Navi seems pretty positive about that, because what does the next pasuk tell us? V'Hashem nasan chachma l'Shlomo ka'asher diber lo. Hashem has given wisdom to Shlomo. Vahi shalom ben Hiram uvein Shlomo vayechrasu brishnehem. There was peace between Hiram and Shlomo, and the two of them contracted a covenant. Now the Radak points out what is so exciting about the peace between Shlomo and Hiram. I thought Shlomo had peace with everybody. No one's making war on Shlomo. So why would the Navi flag? Oh, there was peace between Hiram and Shlomo. So the Radak explains, you know, there's peace and then there's peace, right? There's the cold peace you have between Israel and Egypt ever since 79. And then you have the peace that there is between the United States of America and Canada, right? Both of those relationships can be described as shalom, but they're not the same. Radak says this is a shalom with a capital Shin. Ela shalom kayam v'chazak bibris shekarsu shneim. That peace is reinforced with a covenant, right? It's not just a passive, I don't fight you, you don't fight me. It's a mutually elevating relationship. I benefit from the wood lumber that Hiram provides, and Hiram benefits from the food that Shlomo gives him. So it's a win-win. You know, modern capitalism, free trade, right? Once that happens, so the two parties can be greater than the sum of their parts. You can gain more from cooperation than each of them could separately on their own. And that's happening here. And notice how the Navi clearly approves of this relationship, at least in the Pshat, no? The juxtaposition between the Shalom and the Bris with the first half of the Pasuk, the Hashem nasan chacham l'Shlomo kasher diberlo, which, by the way, we know Hashem gave wisdom to Shlomo. It seems like the Navi is reminding us of that to emphasize that this is all excellent. Shlomo is using his divinely given chachma for very good use to develop this positive relationship with Hiram, which is providing the necessary foundation for the building of the Beis HaMikdash. Okay, now the Navi shifts to talk about, you know, besides the diplomatic agreements, what else do we need to build the Beis HaMikdash? The answer is we need a lot of manpower. Right? It is a serious undertaking. The Navi says, "Vayal HaMelech Shlomo Mas Mikol Yisrael." You remember when we went through Shlomo's government, the cabinet in Perek Daled? So we had Adoniram, who was the officer in charge of the Mas, and we said that while Mas in modern Hebrew means taxes, and we think of mas as writing a check to the IRS, mas here means a tax in the form of labor. How much of your time do you have to give to the government? So Shlomo has basically a draft. That's what Adoniram was in charge of, the draft. Mikol Yisrael, Vayihamas, Shloshim Aleph Ish. So the draft, 30,000 people are drafted. What are they drafted for? So they're drafted to go to Lebanon to assist in the cutting of the wood. So the way it works out, and Rashi explains how this is working, you're drafted for a year. When you're drafted for the year, look, you're also a farmer. You're also needed a home. So how do you balance your home needs with your Shlomo needs? The Rebbe says, Aseres alafim b'chodesh, chalifos chodesh. All right, so they were there for a month, and they would switch. Chodesh yu b'Lebanon, u'shnayim chadashim b'beisel. So if you were drafted, you spent 1 month in Lebanon, and then you got to cycle back home for 2 months. So we have 30,000 people drafted. They're drafted in three groups of 10,000 each. One group of 10,000 does the work during Tishrei, and then they're off for 2 months. And the second group does the work during Cheshvan, then they're off for 2 months. The third group does the work during Kislev, and then they're off for 2 months, and so on and so forth. They would rotate, and that's how you would serve your draft for the year, being busy with the lumber in Lebanon. Okay. Then the Navi tells us, "Vayhi l'Shlomo shivim elef nosei savval." So he has 70,000 schleppers, u'shmonim elef chotzev bahar, and 80,000 stone cutters, people working at the quarries in the mountains. Now these are not all the way up in Lebanon, right? The Torah praises, one of the many praises of Eretz Yisrael, is Eretz Yisrael has excellent stone, as we know, all the stone used for Adi Yom HaZeh, right, in buildings in Eretz Yisrael. So the stone does not need to be imported, but it does need to be cut and schlepped, and that requires a lot of labor. Now who's doing this? If you read the Pesukim carefully, this does not seem like it is part of the mass of Kol Yisrael. Who are the stone cutters and who are the stone schleppers? By the way, a much more labor-intensive work. Chopping lumber and schlepping lumber is not fun. But cutting stones and schlepping stones, and these are big, is much more intense. So that the we have to turn to Divrei HaYamim to find out who these people are. Rashi here quotes it, I believe. And the pasuk says that Shlomo counted all of the Anashim HaGeirim Asher Be'eretz Yisrael. So who are all of the Geirim? Who are these Geirim? This is probably an accurate translation. These are the Canaanim who are left over in the land. Elsewhere, Divrei HaYamim says that for whatever reason, I think the Dat Mikra explains from the various peace treaties which Bnei Yisrael had contracted, some maybe in a more positive sense and some in a less positive sense. But there were various remnants of the Canaanim who are still in Eretz Yisrael. So it turned out there were 150,000 of them. So plus, right? Plus 3,600. So what does Shlomo do? That is the labor pool that Shlomo calls upon to do the stone cutting and the stone schlepping. So the real heavy labor, that is done by the local Canaanim. It doesn't seem, by the way, that Shlomo has all of them working simultaneously. Right, it's a similar arrangement probably, where that's the overall labor pool from which he would have a similar draft. Okay, you guys are going to work on the stone cutting for a month, and then you're going to go home, and you guys are going to go working on the schlepping the stones from the quarry to Yerushalayim, and then you're going to go home. So that is the overall division of labor. So a massive amount of labor is required to get this done, right? Unlike, however, what the Babylonians would do, where no problem, how do the Romans have their massive building projects? Go fight a war, go capture a bunch of slaves, have those slaves work until they drop dead, and then get new slaves to replace them. All right, that's not what Shlomo is doing over here. Shlomo is setting up peaceful labor rotations. Okay, the Navi closes out the parak by telling us, "Vayitzav hamelach, vayasiu avanim gidolos, avanim yikaros." So they are schlepping large, heavy stones, liyaseid habayis, avnei gazis, to lay the foundation of the house. Look at that, the old 1917 JPS translates correctly. Liyaseid means to lay the foundation of the house with, right, hewn stone. Now, The Abarbanel has a fantastic, fantastic deal, and this is going to be a running theme for the building of the Beis HaMikdash. The foundation stones. Who sees the stones that are in the foundation? Nobody. Right? No one sees the foundation. You have the structure, you have the building, you have the roof. Okay, that is visible. The foundation is underground. No one's ever going to see it. So why does Shlomo need massive and expensive, beautiful, perfectly hewn stone to build a foundation? The foundation is where the contractor saves money. You want to cut costs, you cut costs on the stones that nobody is going to see. So explains the Abarbanel that this is going to be a running theme of Shlomo. Shlomo is not going to cut corners anywhere for the Beis HaMikdash. He will build all of it at the best possible level. Not only because that's like a nice thing to do to show an excitement for the mitzvah, but he says there also is an understanding here, a reflection on what this house is all about. He writes, "Ki ha'adam yireh le'inayim," a house that's for people. So whatever you see, you see. Vashem, you're out of the but Hashem can see the heart. Vamelach hayabona bayis beis Hashem. He understands. This is not a house for flesh and blood. It's a house for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. V'lachin tziva shelo dai b'ki ros v'kos le'abayis. It's not enough to have fancy stone for the walls. Aval gam b'yesod ha'biltin nir'eh yasimu ha'banim b'zah shlemus. But even for the stones that no one's going to ever see. Who is going to see? Who is going to know whether I'm giving it my all? Who is going to know if I'm cutting the quality on the foundation? HaKadosh Baruch Hu, right? And HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Kaviyachol, is the Baal HaBayis over here. He's going to know what the foundation is. So therefore, we're not going to cut costs there, even though it's a place which is invisible to the naked human eye. Great, great point by the Abarbanel. Okay, the parak then just concludes for us. The Yifsalu b'nei Shlomo u'b'nei Chiron. So Shlomo's builders and Hiram's builders and the Givlim, the Mepharshim say this is a small nation of Gval. It's mentioned in the context Yechezkel. Yechezkel has a nevuah where he describes the ultimate destruction of Tzur, and these people, the Givlim, are mentioned in that context. I think we also mentioned it, remember, a few weeks, a couple months ago by now, when we did that, we're doing the Tehillim series, and we did Tehillim Pei Gimel. We had all the nations which surround Eretz Yisrael and want to destroy us all at the same time. And one of them, the pasuk said, "Gival ve'amalek peleshesem yoshvei tzor." So Gival, it sounds like one of those small nations that lives up near Lebanon. So they're working together with Hiram and Shlomo, and they are preparing the stones and the lumber to build the Beis HaMikdash. Wonderful. Now we can go on to begin Perek Vav. So Perek Vav and Perek Zion, we're going to do a little bit differently because the Navi there is going to go into tremendous detail about the building of first the Beis HaMikdash. That's going to be Perek Vav. Then the building of Shlomo's palace. That's going to be Perek Zion. And then the building of the various utensils for the Beis HaMikdash. That's going to be the end of Perek Zion. So it's long, and we're not going to go through it pasuk by pasuk. Because it's kind of dry, but we'll do it a little more quickly, trying to get like a main sense, just a sense of the Beis HaMikdash, and also stopping for some key insights that Mepharshim have along the way. So begin Pasuk Aleph right here, and this is the pasuk which I was saying before was would have been the perfect introductory pasuk for the construction of the Beis HaMikdash. And it's interesting that the Navi did not start it this way. And you can there's fanfare here. You can like hear almost like the trumpets blowing. It was after 480 years, let's say, 480 years since Bnei Yisrael left Mitzrayim. It's the fourth year of Shlomo's reign. Bachodesh Ziv, in the month of Ziv, Hu HaChodesh Hasheni, that is the second month, what we call Iyar, Limloch Shlomo Al Yisrael, since Shlomo is a king. He begins building the house for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Okay, so we definitely can we can appreciate and understand literarily the Navi is making this is a dramatic moment, right? This kind of thing doesn't happen every day. Real celebration year, real drama, real fanfare. Especially the modern Mepharshim all note why are we going back to Yetzias Mitzrayim? Right? Why does the Pasukim have to say, oh, this happened 480 years after Yetzias Mitzrayim? The answer they all give is that what makes this moment so exciting is that this is the moment that we have been waiting for since we left Mitzrayim. And it's not just a nice thing to say. It's literally there in us yashir. What do we say in us yashir? Tevi'emo v'sita'emo behar nachalascha. You're going to bring them and plant them into the mountain in your nachla, in your inheritance. What is the mountain in Eretz Yisrael? Har HaMoriah, right? That's the ultimate destination. One day, right? Now we're gonna get there. Machon l'shivtecha pa'alta Hashem, right? You're gonna establish a machon, a well-established place. Mikdash Hashem kananu yadacha, right? A base of Mikdash and Hashem that you're going to establish. So we've had this dream, right? Hashem takes us out of Yetzias Mitzrayim. That begins the physical process of the Geula. The conclusion of that is going to be when we are in Eretz Yisrael, in Yerushalayim, with a Beis HaMikdash right there. So the process of Geula that began at Yetzias Mitzrayim, we begin singing about it. We leave the Yam Suf. That has finally finished here. The Geula of Mitzrayim is complete upon the building of the Beis HaMikdash. It's appropriate for this week's Parsha's Truma. Right, the Ramban has an introduction to Parshas Truma, which is built off of his introduction to the Sefer Shmos. The Ramban is of the opinion that the purpose for building a Mishkan is to have like a permanent Har Sinai. Har Sinai is a one-off moment in time where Hashem reveals himself, he speaks to Moshe Rabbeinu, he gives him Torah, and all of Klal Yisrael see. So the permanent Har Sinai is the Mishkan, where we have the Luchos and we have the Shechina dwelling over the Aron, and the Shechina continues to provide Torah to Moshe Rabbeinu, and it's all the people right surround the Mishkan. So Ramban says that's the point of a Mishkan. Ultimately, that's the point of a Beis HaMikdash, so we could have the Shechina with a house with surrounded by Klal Yisrael in a permanent level. The Ramban says that the Book of Shmos is the Sefer HaGalut VaHaGeula. It's the book of exile and redemption. And if we blow this down to a whole long shiur, but the 2-minute version of it is that exile and redemption are not only, or even not primarily, physical concepts, but they are metaphysical. They're spiritual concepts. Galus means being exiled from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. By definition, part of that means being exiled from HaKadosh Baruch Hu's land. That's why we leave Eretz Yisrael when we're in Galus. But the real idea of exile is being exiled from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Geula, redemption, is the being reunited with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's why the Ramban says Shmos ends at a very strange spot. Shmos ends with Moshe Rabbeinu finishing the Mishkan, but not being able to walk inside. Torah says at the end of Shmos, the cloud covers the Mishkan, the glory fills the Mishkan. The lo yachol Moshe levo el ohel moed. Moshe could not enter the Ohel Moed, ki shachan alav ha'anan uchvod Hashem aleihas ha'mishkan, because the glory of Hashem has filled the Mishkan. That's how Shmos ends, with Moshe Rabbeinu not able to enter. Then Vayikra begins. Hashem calls Moshe, and Moshe can come inside. But it's a very strange way to end, with Moshe being locked out of the Mishkan that he just built. So the Ramban explains, we end right there. Because the moment where the Shechina comes to dwell at the Mishkan is the moment which concretizes the completion of the redemption. During the days of Avraham and Yitzchak and Yaakov, the Shechina dwelt with the Avos. Right? We know the Medrash about the cloud that dwelt over the tent of Sarah, and then the cloud which goes to dwell over the tent of Rivka. The Avos, the Imos, there's Nevuah happening every single generation. All of a sudden, once they get past Yaakov, Yosef does not have any prophecy. Hashem never speaks to Yosef. Hashem never speaks to any of the other Shvatim. There's no Nevuah at all until Moshe Rabbeinu. Finally, HaKadosh Baruch Hu starts coming back to Bnei Yisrael, and the Geula, the redemption in Sefer Shmos, is the permanent residing of the Shechina among Klal Yisrael in the Mishkan. But the Mishkan itself, it's only a temporary structure. So the real completion of the Geula, the permanent dwelling of the Shechina among the people, only happens here. with the building of the permanent Beis HaMikdash, or as the Rambam calls it, the Beis HaBechira, the chosen house, in the chosen spot. So the redemption at Yetzias Mitzrayim, the beginning of the reuniting of HaKadosh Baruch Hu with Bnei Yisrael, concludes with Shlomo. Something for us to keep in mind, that's like a mussar for us with the whole Shlomo, story, is that since we've been in Galus for 2,000 years, what we think of Geula and like linked, Geula and Mashiach, we have linked hand in hand, right? Like once the Geula happens, we're done. None left for us to do. Wash our hands, end of history, and we're just gonna, sit back and like drink pina coladas for the rest of history. Shlomo's generation is the generation that sees the completion and the culmination of the Geula. If we want to know what a generation that is living a life of full Geula, of full redemption, looks like, it is the generation of Shlomo HaMelech. The problem is that the challenges don't end with Geula. Right? Now you have HaKadosh Baruch Hu in your midst. Now you have to live up to it. Can you keep it? Can you keep what Hashem has given you? That's going to be the challenge that Bnei Yisrael are going to have. We're going to build up. We're going to achieve Geula. Then the question is, can we maintain the state we're at so that we deserve the continuance of the Geula? But in terms of what we're pulling off, we're getting the full thing. We've been waiting for 480 years and more than that, because I guess we get tack on 400 years of Galus before this, right? So almost 1,000 years we're waiting for this moment. Now here we go. Okay, so Shlomo builds a Mishkan. 10 minutes is enough time for us to just get the first few psukim and a few key points. The first pasuk describing the Beis HaMikdash tells us the dimensions of the Beis HaMikdash. It is 60 amos long by 20 amos wide and 30 amos tall. 60 by 20 is double the dimensions of the Mishkan. The Mishkan was 30 by 10. Shlomo's Beis HaMikdash, 60 by 20. So we're transitioning from the temporary to the permanent. Everything's going to be bigger. Everything's going to be double. The height is triple. We go from 10 amos tall, the Mishkan, to 30 amos tall, the Beis HaMikdash. Everything is bigger. There's an ulam. We never had an ulam before. What's the ulam? The ulam is the hallway, literally, I guess, right in front of the actual Heichal, the actual Beis HaMikdash. If you can visualize those pictures of Beis HaMikdash, right? So the Beis HaMikdash is like a T. Right? You have the Kodesh HaKadashim, then you have the Kodesh, and then there's that big fronty part. That's the ulam right there. We did not have one of those in the Mishkan. We have one in the Mikdash. Okay. Pasuk Daled, what else does Shlomo have? Vayasa bayis chalone. So there are windows, and there's some interesting questions. What is this? Shkufim atumim. So shkufim sounds like you watch through them, right? To be vayashkeif means to gaze. A hashkafa is like a world view, right? So shkufim means you gaze through these windows. Atumim means, though, that these windows are closed. So what does it mean? They're like open, so you could look through them, but they're closed. So the Marbanel says the pshat, Dat Mikra likes this. The pshat is that Shlomo made open windows, which you could see through, but he closed them with glass. Glass. That's very fancy for the Beis HaMikdash, is to have glass windows. Now the Mishnayos Masechta Shabbos have a whole discussion. If you have a can you close a window on Shabbos? Why can't you close a window on Shabbos? Because the window they're talking about is you have a hole in your wall, and you have a board. And when you want to close your window, you take the board and you stick the board in the hole. Now, there are different situations the Mishnayos discuss. If the board is just loose on the ground, if the board is attached to the wall by a chain, etc. Regular windows, though, don't have glass. The Abravanel says that Shlomo is spending lots of money to have very fancy glass windows. Chazal and the Gemara, though, have a different interpretation. Chazal and the Gemara say, normally, the way you would have windows is that windows would be narrow on the outside and then wide on the inside. That way, it's as narrow as it can be, so you're minimally exposed to the elements. But since it's very wide on the inside, so that allows more light to come through. So it says, Chazal say the light in the Beis HaMikdash was the opposite, because we don't need the light from the outside. Beis HaMikdash doesn't need any light assistance. What do we want? We don't want the light coming from outside into the Beis HaMikdash. We want the light coming from Beis HaMikdash outside. So that's why the Gemara explains these windows were narrow on the inside, but they were wide, but they were open to the outside to allow the light to come out. Suggestion goes off. Very interesting. Okay. Couple more psukim. So he builds this whole side structure, this all outside the physical Heichal, which has the various offices and storage rooms outside of the Beis HaMikdash. Okay, we're going to get into the specific details of them. But then Pasuk Zion is very interesting. The Pasuk tells us the Habayas Bibanoso Evan Shlema Masa. The house was built with intact stones. What does it mean? What broken stones? What do you mean? So of course, use intact stones. Now he explains Umakavos kol Bibanasa. No hammers or axes or any iron was used in the Beis HaMikdash. In other words, all of the stones had to be pre-prepared. There is no metal, no axes or hammers to prepare these stones on the premises. That makes things a lot more complicated, by the way, because when you have to transport these stones, so inevitably, you're going to have nicks and dings along the way. So the easier way to do it is you cut the rock at the quarry, you schlep the rock to the building location. Once the rock is on site, then your artisans, bang and et cetera, and they make it a nice smooth stone, and then you put it in the wall. If you make it all beautiful and perfect at the quarry, then they have to wrap every single stone in bubble wrap, right, to make sure that it's nothing happens to it on the way there. So Shlomo is making this a much more inconvenient and difficult process than it has to be. Okay, why is he doing that? So the basic reason is a pasuk, but as the Abarbanel is going to point out, there's more to it than that. Pasuk tells us at the end of Parshas Yisro, so you can't wave a sword. No metal can be used for the stones of the Mizbeach. The sword is going to disgrace and is going to contaminate the stones of the Mizbeach. Ramban explains, everyone explains, Mizbeach is about life, it's about Chaim, the sword is the symbol of death. Judaism does not venerate the sword. We do not worship warfare. As we said at the very beginning of this year, the Beis HaMikdash itself cannot be built unless Bnei Yisrael are at peace. And therefore, the stones of the Mizbeach cannot touch metal. Okay. The Rambam brings us the halacha, and the Rambam brings us the halacha, but it only applies to the stones of the Mizbeach and the stones of the ramp, which is part of the Mizbeach system. So it points out the Abarbanel that Shlomo is taking this farther than he had to. Shlomo is not allowing any metal to be used in the Beis HaMikdash premises, right? The stones themselves, it's Machlokas in the Gemara, whether the stones themselves were cut with metal tools or not. But the Abarbanel points out that Shlomo is using metal, but he's going way, way, way lifnei mishuras hadin. He's doing way more than he has to. Hu lemalas habayis ushlemusa. Shlomo is saying, not only am I going to take this idea that the Beis HaMikdash is a Mizbeach, is a Mikdash of peace, and the Mizbeach is a Mizbeach of light. So the Torah tells me no metal for the stones of the Mizbeach. I'm going to take that idea of peace, and I am going to imbue it into the entire structure of the entire Beis HaMikdash. I'm not going to have a single stone which is going to be touched by by metal. Abarbanel points out this is a machlokas Chazal. He does quote the Mechilta, who says that that the stones of the Mikdash cannot touch metal, just like the stones of the Mizbeach. But we point out, la halacha, we do not pass in that way, right? The Rambam says it only applies to the stones of the Mizbeach. So Shlomo is doing more than he has to. Again, it's going, right? So we saw the foundation stones were beautiful, fancy stones, because Shlomo knows. The people may not see what's down there, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu does. And similarly, when it comes to when metal instruments will touch the stones in the Mizbeach of the Mikdash, so Shlomo understands this is all about as a building of peace. We're going to distance sword. No metal instruments will be heard coming from Har HaBayis. Oh, finally, let's just build up to Pasuk Yud Gimel. So the Navi continues and describes the structure all around the Mizbeach, the Mikdash, the different buildings and offices that were there. The Navi then says that Shlomo overlays the entire Mikdash structure with cedar wood. We'll see ultimately he's going to then plate that wood with gold. But Rashi explains that the gold holds much better to wood than it does to stone. So they do a very difficult process of basically building two buildings. They build a stone building, and then perfectly fitting into that, they build a wooden inner structure, which they're going to ultimately add gold plating to. And is then at that point, once the structure of the Mikdash is done, we have the stone and we have the wood before we get to the fancy stuff. So boom, at that moment, all of a sudden a message comes to Shlomo. Vayhi dvar Hashem el Shlomo lema. So I'll just read the pasuk, and we'll see a couple of insights from the Mefarshim, and then we'll close for this week. So what's the message to Shlomo? Abayas asher atabona, the house that you are building, im telech mishvatay, if you follow with my mitzvos, vishamartas, you do everything that you're supposed to do, vakimosias itach, I will hold up my word to you, asher dibarti al David avich, which I said to your father David. B'soch b'nei Yisrael, I'll dwell among Israel. Exactly what we say at the beginning of this week's parsha. Parshas Shuvah, v'lo ezov es ami Yisrael, and I will not abandon my nation Israel. So there are a number of questions to ask. First of all, we can ask, doesn't Shlomo know this? How many times does the Torah tell us? No, we know the deal. If we want Hashem to be with us, we keep the mitzvahs, right? If Hashem is not with us, we don't keep the mitzvahs. There's nothing new here. The Torah says this a million times. So why does Shlomo need this message? Question one. Question two, why is Shlomo getting this message now? He's in the middle of building the Beis HaMikdash. He could have gotten it at the beginning. He could have gotten it at the end. Why is he getting the message in the middle? And question three is the first of all note, Shlomo does not get a prophecy over here. Hashem seems to speak to Shlomo twice. Once will be later on, and once was the dream that we already saw. Here, Vayhi Devar Hashem, the word of Hashem came to Shlomo, means that a Navi comes to Shlomo to give him a prophecy. So why doesn't Shlomo get the Nevuah directly? Okay, maybe not as strong a question as the other two. Shlomo, even though he gets Nevuah, we definitely would not say that Shlomo is a regular prophet. But still, once he has gotten Nevuah a couple of times, it is noteworthy that the third time it comes from secondhand. It comes from a Navi, it doesn't come to himself. Why is it happening over here? So why the information, which we know already, why the information now at this stage in the building process, and why is it coming through a Navi? Those are three problems to have. So one answer, at least to some of them, comes from the Metzudas David. And the Metzudas David says that Hashem basically wants to give some, just a little bit of a reminder to Shlomo. Don't get carried away. Shlomo, you're building this beautiful building. Remember, what's the real goal of the Beis HaMikdash? The goal of the Beis HaMikdash is not to have beautiful stone. It's not to have beautiful wood. It's not to have beautiful gold. What is the one thing that the Beis HaMikdash needs for it to fulfill its mission? HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Right? The Hasharas HaShechina is what matters. So that's what Hashem is reminding Shlomo. Shlomo, the physical building, everything is great. But just remember that what really matters isn't the physical element of this building. It is the spiritual element of this building. The question, will the Shechina reside in the Mikdash, which we're not going to find out until Parak Ches. Says, Lo eshre bo Shechina si. My Shechina is not going to dwell. So if you want the mission to be achieved, which is the actual Shechina, so then we need to follow the mitzvahs. Okay, fine. That's the stuff. Abarbanel, though, has another idea. And it answers like all the questions we have before. So it says, go back to what Shlomo has done. He says Shlomo has put in unbelievable effort. And in many ways, the most labor-intensive part of the Mikdash is finished by Pasuk Yud Gimel. The massive stones and the massive wood, that's done. The rest of the Mikdash is going to be the artistry, the carvings, the pillars, the gold plating, the utensils. That's all very fancy, delicate work, but it's not the heavy labor which requires, tens of thousands of people. Shlomo's hard work is done by Pasuk Yud Gimel, right? The negotiations with Hiram, the draft, figuring out how to get all the stuff to Yerushalayim, that was Shlomo's difficult job. The rest is going to be, the architects and the artisans who are going to, he's going to contract to make the decorations. But now Lafisha Shlomo nis lasos min habayis mufla, right? And Shlomo wanted this, and he's going all out. Shlomo is not leaving a stone unturned. no pun intended, to pull off this mikvah. Now, Barbanel has another suggestion. He thinks that part of what Shlomo wanted to do was Shlomo wanted to make the mikdash look supernatural. And part of the reason why he suggests that Shlomo wants no metal to be on the premises is to make it almost look like it's like, supernatural. How does perfectly stone get here? Perfectly cut stone get here? Anyway, Barbanel says at this stage where you've built this amazing and engineeringly perfect building, you might think that, okay, that's it. The house is going to stand forever. He says, no. The stone is impressive. The wood is impressive. However, the coals that Yamdu Hadvarm Hahim Shlomo wanted a physically powerful building that can stand forever. Lachin Kodem Sheyasa Shar Ha'otza. Before he does the decoration, the wood plating, the gold plating, the kruvim, the utensils. What Shlomo has finished, explains the Abarbanel, is the quote unquote permanent part of the Mikdash. Everyone knows that gold plating can be torn off of the walls. Everyone knows that the fancy kruvim and everything can be stolen. But the massive stone building, Shlomo is thinking, can stand forever. Right? Uki'ilu asa Hashem yisparach lo hasra. So now Hashem needs to give Shlomo a warning. And the warning is, don't think that you have built a supernatural and permanent building. Okay? You want it to look that way because you want people to think of this not as a regular house, but they should think of it as a house of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And that's wonderful and that's amazing. But what's going to guarantee the permanence of this structure? Not at all your engineering prowess. It's going to guarantee the permanence, which you're after with the stones and the lumber, is going to be keeping the mitzvot. He suggests maybe that is why Hashem sends this message to him through a Navi, because it's a little bit of a wake-up call for Shlomo. Shlomo, it's amazing how much effort you are putting into this mikdash, but don't get carried away. It's like claps him back to earth. Right? Hey, Shlomo, maybe things are slacking. Maybe you're getting too caught up in the wood and the stone and the importing and all the physical details. When you realize, hey, wait a second, I didn't get the nevuah. Why didn't I get the nevuah? Maybe I'm getting too caught up in the physical. I have to balance that with the spiritual. That's the suggestion of the Abarbanel that's happening over here. So all around, Shlomo, things are clicking on all cylinders. It's an amazing mikdash. It's an amazing feat. Shlomo is sparing no effort to do things and to do things right in terms of the money, in terms of the time, in terms of the work. He's emphasizing peace. He understands the mission of peace that the mikdash is after. The key idea that this is a house for Hashem and the Shekhinah should reside here. So Matsudas David and Abarbanel say this is the perfect point to remind Shlomo, right? Dafka, when you're so caught up in the work, it can be easy or easier to forget what it's all about ultimately. So that's the reminder to Shlomo. So we'll stop here. And then next week, we'll do the rest of Vav and Zion, just get at least a sense of what the rest of the Mikdash looked like before we go on with Parak Ches and go back to Shlomo's career.